Thanks, Don, and thanks everyone for coming to our late afternoon session on the second day of the conference. I'm going to talk to you today about further results from a study that we've been talking about now for a couple of sessions. Last year I talked to you about our discovery of using slipping, employee-reported slipping, as an outcome measure. This year we're going to talk to you about what we learned from employees in terms of their ability to perceptually rate or give us perceptual feedback about floor surfaces they're used to experiencing and what that had to do with their future slipping. So this is my team, all of whom are from the Liberty Mutual Research Institute for Safety, except for Melissa Perry there at the end. She's at George Washington University now. I have no relationships to disclose. A little bit about our institute for those who aren't familiar. We're a fully peer-reviewed institution. We publish everything we do in the open peer-reviewed press. Basically, we're organized in the four centers, the top three of which in that list participated in the study. The lead center was the Center for Injury Epidemiology. And our mission is to advance scientific, business-relevant knowledge in workplace, highway safety, and work disability. So why falls? If we look globally, falls, along with a number of other injury causes, are on the increase, as recently documented by the Global Burden of Disease and Injury data. And if we look in high-income countries, falls are much more dominant, and particularly in the U.S., falls have seen a dramatic rise here in the last 20 years, only sort of outcompeted by Alzheimer's and, I believe, kidney liver disorders. That's the only other two causes that have had similar jumps in their contribution to disability adjusted life years. So falls are a very significant problem, particularly in high-income countries, but also globally. Looking at the U.S., we know that falls are the leading emergency department-treated injury in the United States in every age category except for the 15 to 24, where I'm sure Don would agree it's probably those kids out there hitting each other on the playing field that really displaces that. But it's a big surprise to a lot of people who might suspect that motor vehicle crashes or some other cause would be the number one. It's actually falls, and it's been that way for a while, probably the last, in this many categories, probably for at least the last 7 years. Our own workplace safety index, which is a metric we generate to look at the national direct insured costs of just the workplace injuries, so just now looking at workplace injuries, shows significant contribution from falls. And we've been also seeing, just like the global burden data, a very big swing, a very big increase in same-level falls in terms of their contribution to the total injury burden over the past 13 years that we've been generating the index. Why restaurants? Because the restaurants are employing a big swath of the American population, American workforce, about 10 million workers, about 8% of the workforce overall, and they're also predicted to be one of the faster-growing occupations out there. We know that restaurant workers from prior work are exposed to slippery environments, that slip, trips, and falls are the leading cause of injury among restaurant workers. And so we've done a series of studies over the past decade or so trying to better isolate and understand human and environmental factors related to slipping, tripping, and falling. In particular, objective factors like friction, roughness, things like that, as well as subjective factors. And we got the ideas originally from a conference we did. This is the proceedings kind of image down here in the corner. It's what we call a Hopkinton Conference or a scientific summit. And at that summit, one of the things that was talked about was that there wasn't much work integrating subjective and objective measures. So we set out to do that. So that's our prior work. Along the way, we learned that you could use slipping, self-reported slipping, as an outcome, and it works actually pretty robustly. And so in more recent work that's been presented here the last couple of years, I know Santosh has talked to you guys about the fact that some of the study findings were that for each 0.1 change in the coefficient of friction, which normally ranges from 0 to 1, for each 0.1 step up in the study, you got a 21% buyback in the rate of slipping. And those who were wearing slip-resistant footwear in the restaurants actually had a 54% lower rate of slipping than those who didn't, which was a very significant impact as well. So those are some of our prior results on the study. Why perception? So the largest proportion of same-level fall injuries are attributed to slipping, and prior laboratory research has shown strong correlations between objective and subjective measures in laboratory. So if I give you a contrast in laboratory of surface A, B, C, or D and let you walk on it, you can generally give me a pretty good idea of which of those you think is more slippery, and you're probably pretty accurate if we measured it based on COF. The challenge is a lot of the laboratory studies are based on very high contrast conditions. So dry versus wet versus oily versus, you know, where it's almost, you know, you really have to work hard not to get the right answer. So when we went down to the actual work environment where things are a lot more muddled, and actually asked people about this, we found a much more modest correlation between COF and perception, worker self-reported perception. So our motivation here was, okay, we don't really know whether perception has any association with the actual risk of slipping, although we do know its association with friction's a bit on the weak side. If perception and the risk of slipping were strongly associated, then perception-based measures are a lot more practical to implement than classic friction testing where you need a device and a person who knows how to use it and, you know, time and a lot of very intricate measures on the floor to do a risk assessment. This could be a really scalable risk assessment approach. So our hypotheses in the study were that workers' future risk of slipping would be higher in those restaurants with higher slipperiness ratings at baseline, and that restaurant workers' future risk of slipping would be higher in those areas within a restaurant where than the areas that they did not rate as highly at baseline data collection. So our design type was a prospective cohort. We also had a nested case crossover arm, which I'm not going to talk about. Just want to acknowledge it's there. We've previously presented on that here at APHA. And essentially at baseline, we measured surface characteristics. We looked at footwear and documented footwear. We asked them about floor cleaning frequency, talked to the workers about their perceptions, and I'll show you how we did that in just a second on subsequent slides. And then for each week for the next 12 weeks, we followed workers and asked them to report their usual frequency, their typical frequency of slipping during the week, where they slipped, what they slipped on, and also hours worked and some other data. So here's how we did the perception assessment. We basically gave them a store map and gave them, we don't have verbal anchors on here, but we had basically verbal labels for all these areas, like front counter, fry vat, things that were very much in the language of the industry. And then on a scale from 1 to 4, we asked them to rate not slippery to very slippery for each of those areas. In terms of the objective measures, we actually did coefficient of friction testing. You can see an example of somebody doing that work here. It's a very meticulous activity. As well as roughness assessments. We looked at slip resistance of the shoes based on manufacturer's mark because there's currently no standard for slip-resistant footwear, so you're going to have to go with the manufacturer's willing to argue that it's slip-resistant. We'll classify it that way. We also talked to managers about the frequency of cleaning in the kitchen. Workers were interviewed. We actually found some interesting things about workers not following proper cleaning practices and actually defeating cleaning product and basically rendering it inert in practice. So that was actually a key finding in the study, is it because of population stereotypes, people think that hot water is good stuff, and so they put enzymatic cleaner in hot water and kill the enzymes. And it was about 60%+ of the population that was doing that, so that was deploying the product. So our outcome was basically, as I said, every week for the next 12 weeks, we asked them about the number of slips. The participants could report their slip experience, as Santosh pointed out to you in Monday's session, via telephone, internet, or we had a very, very small proportion that actually used mail-in forms. But most of them use telephone, IVR, or the internet. We used basically the negative binomial generalized estimating equations model to account for the fact that participants are nested within the restaurants and therefore likely correlated. And essentially our results, we had 36 sites around 6 states, 3 major chains, main menu items, your classic fast food menu items. Over a 3-year period, we collected data from about 500 participants, averaging about 12, 13 people per restaurant. The age was as expected on the younger side, predominantly women, mostly English-speaking. We had the survey in 3 languages, English, Spanish, and Portuguese. Education was kind of evenly split between no high school graduate, and then some college or above. And the job tenure was actually pretty long, actually, for what we've been led to expect for the industry was actually pretty a good bit longer than we expected. So the overall analysis, and for those of you who don't like results slides, I've got a blow-up explanation of this on the next page, but looking at the table here, I think the key thing is to know what we adjusted for, which is age, gender, BMI, education, primary language, mean COF, use of slip-resistant shoes in restaurant chains. So we have a lot of adjustment. We see a very significant effect here. Basically, for each 1-point change in the perception scale or score, the subsequent rate of slipping increased by a factor of nearly 3. At the area level within each restaurant, for each 1-point increase, you have an even stronger result of 2.9 for each 1-point change. And we didn't collect objective data about where people were working in the store, but we did ask them where were the 3 locations they spent the most of their time. And so we ran a sensitivity analysis to kind of check the bias against, you know, maybe we were counting spaces that we shouldn't have counted. And when we did the sensitivity analysis reflecting where they told us they spent the majority of their time, this effect became stronger. So the strengths of the study: prospective cohort epidemiologic design, relatively large sample size, multiple employers, chains, and languages, so the study was relatively accessible to the work populations we were approaching, adjustment for multiple potential covariates and confounders, limitations, self-reported outcome, perception we measured as a black box, so we couldn't tell you in this study what aspect of perception was it. There are people doing lab work on that. For example, is it because things are shiny? Is it because you have slipped there before? You know, what is exactly that's driving the perception? We just took it as a black box value. And the generalizability to non-restaurant environments is not really clear. We'd like to think that this idea is or concept is robust, but thanks. We're not entirely sure that's true. But this is the first epidemiologic study to examine worker perception of slipperiness and the subsequent risk of slipping. And the perceptions were strongly associated with the subsequent rate of slipping. We also found in this a previously demonstrated strong association between COF persisted in this analysis. And so the combination of perception and COF measures will be more robust probably than either of them alone. But perception measures, as I pointed out earlier, can be a lot more practical to implement, a lot more scalable, not requiring the equipment and expertise of COF measures. So the results suggest that aggregated worker perceptions of slipperiness could provide a scalable approach to identifying slipping hazards and potentially assessing intervention effectiveness pre-post hoc. The paper is actually online open access at Occupational Environmental Medicine. You can either snap a shot of the QR code there, or just if you put my last name and first two initials into PubMed, it's in the first couple, three papers that pop up, just to get you there quickly. Every study like this takes a village, and ours is no exception. So here's our village, and we thank them for all the work they did, in addition to all the co-investigators. And I'm happy to take your questions at this point. Thank you. Yes.
I wonder about how you identify the restaurant, or whether some chose it just to opt out, maybe because some of them had high risk of slippers.
So the question is the restaurants themselves?
Yeah.
I think one of the challenges when you're doing really any epidemiologic work is what your access to the population is, right? So in occupational studies, that means going through employers. And so if you're saying, were there employers who were really horrible that didn't want people to come in and you know, look at their conditions? Probably yes. But we actually had a pretty broad range of conditions. So the COF, the average COF measures in our study ranged from around the 0.4s to the 0.8s. So there was a big swing between the best and the worst location in the study. So that would tend to argue away from that. But I would say that there tends to be in any occupational study a bit of an optimistic bias, because the companies that want to engage and learn more about the problem tend to be the companies who will likely be more proactive. So this could be seen as best case conditions, worst case conditions could be a lot uglier. But that should make the effect stronger, the effect more dramatic, essentially.
Another question?
Yeah, we actually kind of confess that in the paper, that as a black box value, we don't know exactly what characteristics might have driven the perception. The important thing to us was that workers can give us a score, and that score is highly predictive. So basically, if we're looking to find places to intervene in the store, the fact that they can consolidate and sort of identify the same places that they're going to subsequently have problems over the next 3 months, that's a really key factor. So we didn't worry about unpacking that, but it is a limitation.